Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen.
We're going with that.
Yep. As always, I'm your flawless, delivering lines as intended host, Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my snot-adverse co-husband. That's been a day. Co-host and work husband, Harrison Poole, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
I'm still reeling from, I made an impromptu decision to buy a week of Bumble Plus.
Why?
I want to see if the big bumblebee's cucking me out of matches for want of cold hard cash.
Okay.
I'm seeing, like, do I get more matches if I pay? It's a suspicion I have.
Okay.
Because I know Tinder, like, hardcore, like, hides you if you don't pay.
See, the thing that I don't get about the dating app model is it's designed to make money.
Yeah.
And if you find love on their service,
yeah,
you are no longer a customer.
Yes.
So they no longer make money off of you.
This is correct.
So they're not designed to help you find love.
No.
Then why do you use them? Why do you use them for the purpose of attempting to find love if they're specifically designed to not give you love so that you stay a customer?
Because as a society, we've largely lost third spaces, and so we use the forums we have access to.
Okay.
It's where everyone goes to find it. It's a situation where, yeah, it's a terrible thing to, it's a terrible way to meet someone, but that's where everyone's going to meet people. So it's also really overpriced.
Yeah, that's the, I don't know.
It's 24 for a week.
I fell in love with my boss. I'm not anyone to give advice. I just don't understand if it's designed to make money off of you, and if you succeed, it no longer makes money off of you. Why anyone is incentivized?
Because it works. It does. People have made relationships off of dating apps. Plenty of people have. Like, it'd be a different story if no one ever found anyone, but tons of people do.
Sure. I can't think of anyone recent. I remember in, like, the beginning days.
I have a friend who's been in a relationship for, like, 4 years from Facebook dating.
Interesting. I don't know
Cameron
anyone
met
recently, though.
His girlfriend on Bumble. He met all three of his girlfriends on Bumble.
Oh, damn.
His last three. Last two? His last two.
But hasn't he been with his current girlfriend for, like, a decade?
I don't think it's been a decade. No, it couldn't have been a decade.
Okay, how has it been near? Because
no.
I know, because I heard, I remember hearing, like, 2-3 years ago, like, they were announced, I don't know if they announced, but people were talking about that there was a shift in the algorithm, and that, like, now it's really designed.
Yeah, well, everything's
to, like,
bad, and everything is designed to make money off you, never give you what you want. We're just existing in late-stage capitalism like little monkeys. If anything, the song Dance Monkeys more relevant than ever. Aren't we all just monkeys dancing, you know?
No.
Forced to dance our whole lives? Dance,
no.
Monkey, dance, monkey, dance?
No, and that's an obnoxious song. I hate it so much.
Oh, it's my top 10 easily.
I know, and it's insane.
It's the Jack Black of music.
To each their own. I'm going to let you have this. My taste in movies, and you find baffling sometimes, so I'm just going to let you have this one weirdo
song. I find most things most my friends do baffling, if I'm being honest. I'm constantly baffled by everyone around me.
Why?
I don't know. I just think everyone is weird things. Not like extremely, like, whoa, baffled. But like, oh, all right. It's my reaction to most things is, oh, all right, cool.
I don't even
know. I sit in my ivory tower.
Yeah, I don't even know where to begin.
What I sit on my high horse.
What do you mean?
The thing it
can
really
you
is
give
just,
any example that isn't gonna, like,
not keep,
make someone
I keep
upset.
These things very private for a reason.
Okay.
I never vocalize them because it's probably gonna make someone very upset.
Is there anything? I'm not gonna get upset. What is the thing that I do outside of thinking Jack Black is the best?
I'll point it out next time.
Please.
It's never something I, like, retain knowledge of. I don't have, like, a library of things my friend. It just, you know. I think a lot of people in my life were kind of silly a lot of the times.
Okay. So I just bought hearing aids on an online liquidation auction. It is uniquely dystopian, betting on necessary basic medical equipment on an online liquidation auction.
Yeah, why don't you just buy it out of pocket?
Because I can't afford it. And I have a hearing test scheduled in November.
And you want to pass with the hearing aids?
No, well, no, they're going to make me take it without.
I get you.
But they're going to make me take it without. But they're going to tell me I need hearing aids. Like, if I didn't, I mean, we've had conversations before. I can't hear. I bought an okay, I gather an okay pair of hearing aids. This will at least tell me whether or not I like hearing aids before I spend insurance money.
If you want
them.
I can just grab my grandfather's for you.
I already bought these. I'm picking them up Saturday.
He doesn't have to use them. He doesn't need to hear anymore. He's not dead yet. There's no reason for this man to hear anymore.
I'm not stealing your grandfather's.
There's no sensory. No, I'm stealing. There's no sensory retaining going on, you know?
Okay. What?
His brain's mush.
So we're going to find out whether or not I like hearing aids. I hope I do. I kind of forget what a lot of the world sounds like. And this is just to you, but also to like everyone listening. If you've ever whispered to me in the last 10 years, I have not heard you once. I'm not along. I'll be like, yeah. And I will guess what you said based on the previous and the next conversation.
I'm not sure I've whispered in like 10 years.
You don't whisper as much as, and I'm not sure if it's actually mumbling or I can't hear, but I'll hear sound from you and know.
I mumble a lot.
Yeah, I can't hear like what you say. Like when we're driving and getting groceries, sometimes you talk and I'm like, I desperately want to hear you, but also I feel like you're kind of just talking to
talk.
You
can just say repeat yourself. Yeah. I'm constantly asked to repeat myself.
Okay. Most people don't like that, and that's super annoying.
As long as it's not more than once. If someone asks me like three times to repeat myself, I'm like, ugh.
Okay.
But like once, because I'm like, oh, I was mumbling, and then I'll be clear and loud about it. But
sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, I hope I like hearing aids. My grandmother hers was a different thing. Hers was a virus that like completely killed her nerves in her left ear. So she went completely deaf in her late 20s.
Earworm.
Yeah. I mean, basically, it was something to do with like
the earworm virus.
Yeah. Not chicken pox.
My mom's
late in life. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she got so used to it. And what she would do is if she didn't want to talk to you at like a dinner table or anything, she would sit you on her bad side and then sit the people she specifically wanted to speak to on her good side.
I'm just excited for you to hear the, I don't think you've ever heard it, the slight like diegetic ambient noise that surrounds Geneva like 24/7.
I can't wait.
During the summer, I think it's New York City. I've never asked her about it. I assume it's like asking someone about BO. You can't be like, hey, why do you smell? I can't be like, hey, why are here taxis?
But if I don't like them, then I'll just go deaf and be okay with that and figure it out. The thing is, I really had to get hearing aids. One, since my tube fell out a couple months ago, I have an adult set of a permanent adult set of tubes. My right ear came out a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and my hearing has gotten so much worse on my left side. Like noticeably, there has been a drop, and it has started to affect my stand-up where I can't properly tune into the audience as easily anymore. And so I'm hoping with hearing aids, it might be a thing that I only put them on stage if I absolutely hate them. It might be a thing where I'm like, this is just a thing I need for work.
It's not makes sense. My mom was like, there's no way, talking with my dad way back, I presume while they were playing pool, about how his family has like no genetic thing. She's like, you have to have something. And I'm like, I think there are like only two people in my life. I'm one of them. that doesn't just have some pre-existing condition.
The thing also with pre-existing conditions is that when one thing is bad, a bunch of things are bad. So I find it a little annoying when people are like, how can you have bad hearing and Tourette's and like this in like this other shit? And I'm like, they're not necessarily all related, but if like one thing in my brain is messed up, then the things that my brain controls are like, also going to be slightly messed up.
I have the hiatal hernia, but that's just, I take a pill for it and I'm good. Something I don't really think about.
Sure. I used to
go to the doctor and they're like, spick and span, Mr. Olenchek, on your way.
Hell yeah. I used to get regular hearing tests. I used to have like a whole ear routine. COVID hit and I stopped going to the ENT regularly. And I thought I was fine.
The idea of going to a specialist doctor regularly is just nuts to me. I don't think I've ever been to a specialist doctor.
There's no way that's true. There's no way that's true.
I can say for certain in my adult life.
Sure. That might be the most insane thing you've ever said.
Not in high school. It's only been general practitioner.
This might be the biggest lore drop to me personally that you've ever said to me. And it's... That's insane.
That's insane. The doctor takes care of everything. You got your doctor and your dentist.
No, you have your general practitioner.
Yeah.
And then when things are out of their scope, you go to a...
I don't think I've ever had a situation that was outside the scope of a general practitioner. Like my one serious injury I had where I cracked my chin, general practitioner just stitched that up.
No, You didn't have to go to, that's insane. Oh my God, that's so annoying.
He was also,
you're and this, so this
gonna,
lucky.
This is going to drive so you annoying. Nuts. This is going to drive you nuts. Until I turned 18, My general practitioner was the man who delivered me.
Nice.
Yeah. I literally saw one doctor.
Until he retired, he did not actually deliver me. He was supposed to, but a different doctor delivered me. The doctor who delivered me lost his license within the year to chronic cocaine use.
Hell, that's a good doctor.
Yeah, and if you ask my parents, there were signs.
That's a good doctor. I want my doctor on cocaine. No, I mean, I can't even conceive of a situation that might have happened in my life where I would have needed to see like a special doctor for something.
Sure. Not everyone sees the neurologist or saw the neurologist. Not everyone has like Tourette's-y things.
No, but
an ENT is the thing.
Anything that could be taken to like a specialist never reached the point. Because like I have eczema, right? That could be a dermatologist thing.
Sure.
It never reaches, it's not severe enough and it never reached the point where he couldn't take care of it. Like he was like, yeah, just do this. And I did it. I'm like, oh, good, it's fixed.
You lucky bastard.
He's like, slap some cortisone on that bitch. I'm like, okay. Use the shampoo. Yeah, okay, we're good. It has led to a really warped perception of me where I'm like, how are these people keeping bit? I realize it being ridiculous, but I'm like, how the fuck are there so many gynecologists? How many are there? There's so many.
Yeah.
And then I remember that like half the population are huge ass countries.
Over half the population of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, I just, I don't know. Seems pretty specialized. I didn't think they get that much business.
I'm glad you realized the error of your ways.
You go like once a year to the gynecologist and everything else your general practitioner takes care of.
I'm glad you've seen the error of your ways.
And like, even if that's true, I was ignoring the fact that that'd still be like 500,000 people a year.
There are
in like
more
a major city, at least.
I was like, there are more than a million people in
like,
this country.
In a major city, like that's at least 500,000 people a year.
Yeah.
More, probably.
Sure, yes. Like in New York City?
Okay, that makes sense when I thought about it. But I'm like once a year, right? Sucks that if you're born a woman, you have to see a specialized person once a year. That's how much you see specialized people. Unless you're my mom. She's a pain doctor.
Yeah, given all the information you've dropped about her, that doesn't shock me.
I just feel like a regular doctor could do a pain doctor's job. Like, what does he do? So what is his specialness? What special knowledge does he bring of pain?
He has...
unless he's inflicting it, the pain doctor sounds like a man from Mad Max who causes it. What special knowledge does he have of pain? It's...
He probably has a vast, more specialized knowledge of, like how different pain affects different people and, like, how different pain affects different areas and, like, different causes of different pains and, like, when you have a bunch of different pains together, how they all can interact with each other. A general practitioner is, like, rate your overall pain.
Yeah, you're going to go to the pain doctor. He's going to be like, your general practitioner said this was one ouchie. It's two. $5,000, please. Give me different types of pain. Pain hurts. Pain is something that hurts. There's different types of pain.
and this is just personal. An ear infection hurts differently than, like, when you sprain your leg. Like, they're two different types of pain that you would measure differently.
Just hurts more.
No, they're different types of pain. Mm. Have you never had an ear infection before?
I had some water stuck in my ear for a bit, but it didn't really hurt. Then it just came out one day.
Yeah, then probably no.
No, I don't think I've ever had an ear infection.
I get about 3 to 4 a year.
I think the wildest infection I've ever had, like the wildest out there thing that's ever affected me.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, like, you know, like it's gone now, but like I fucked up my like tendons in this arm.
Yeah.
I microfractured this leg.
Sure.
Split my chin. But other than that, like I had feet, foot, mouth.
Okay.
As a kid,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the wildest thing I've had.
So a very normal thing that young children get.
I assume it's very rare.
It's a very normal thing young children
get. Other than that,
get.
I've had like the flu. Never had COVID.
No, oh my God.
I'm COVID zero, baby. I hate needles. So I haven't got a tattoo. If I ever get a tattoo, just going to say COVID zero.
I was the first person in Fairfield County to get diagnosed with COVID. I left.
Did they put you in the newspaper?
Yes.
Amazing.
They did, but they were not allowed to identify me. So
I was about to make a front page.
Reading an article about yourself where they're not allowed to give any identifying features, but they also have to alert the public that you exist.
That's so fucking funny.
It is surreal.
Not, like, I don't think I've really... I can't...
I got regular phone calls with the CDC, and they would, like, ask me to, like, rate my symptoms and, like, track my symptoms. And they were, like, a couple times a day.
That's amazing.
And they asked me, they, like, had me say businesses that I had been to in the last,
so you had to be, like, right at the onset of COVID.
I left Kent. They canceled Pete Holmes at Hilarity's, I want to say, like, March 9th or something. I left Kent either that evening or the morning after. So that's, what, the 10th? And then by the world shut down on the 13th, something like that. The 14th, I was in the hospital.
That's wild.
And they gave me a COVID test.
One of the favorite things is that despite all evidence to the contrary, I'm an incredibly healthy individual. Like a lot of people are like, oh, look at this fucking schlub, you know? I'm not like unhealthy, but I don't seem like I'm living like a particularly healthy, not unhealthy lifestyle, but I'm not doing anything.
Sure.
And like all my stuff's like perfect. I'm in good shape. All my levels are good. Bilirubin's a bit high, but it's within normal things. And like my family kind of has high bilirubin as a thing, so it might just be genetic. But yeah, doctor's always like, man, you're good. Like, okay, cool.
Nice.
Then I walk outside, start whistling, all the birds come down and land on my fingers. The sun says, hey, Matthew. I'm like, hey. He's like, look down. I'm like, wow, $500 just laying on the ground?
It's so annoying how lucky your life has turned out. Because you do, I'm not saying you don't work hard and you do nothing, but you like do, you work when you have to. You do nothing to like go for it, you know? Like,
yeah.
You're just like, and things just fall into your lap. The most effort you do is accept things that fall into your lap.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah.
You don't chase after anything.
And I don't chase after it. Look, I believe full-heartedly that by just doing around, you know, the universe provides. If you don't struggle against the universe, if you just accept it, if you just accept you're just one part of this cosmic chain of causality, and you go along for the ride, things happen like they're supposed to.
And I think that is an incredibly privileged take. It's not necessarily one that I disagree with in like, I don't disagree with your theory,
yeah,
but I also think that there are factors in people's lives that affect their ability to be able to go with the natural flow as easily as you can.
Well, some people just aren't supposed to be doing as good as I am. That's my belief, is that all of us are chained to causality, and some of us have terrible destinies and some of us don't. And I was very lucky not to be one of those people that have bad destinies. But I just think some people, their lives are going to suck and they're going to die alone and depressed, and it's super unfortunate, but there's nothing anyone can do to change that. And that we're all just toy maker's creations trapped in a fucking crystal ball, and he is uncaring.
What?
I just think I think we're kind of like in a purgatory, and some people are just doing worse than others, and there's nothing anyone can do to change that. And the most you can do is hope that that fate's kinder to you.
I can't tell if this belief system comes from narcissism, privilege, an absolute aversion to, or not aversion to Catholicism, but a deep belief in Catholicism, but not believing in any of its practices.
I was talking about it today with Vic, because her girlfriend's, she says she's the most Catholic person I know, and she doesn't believe in God. I'm like, yeah, it's every Catholic. We're better religious people, because we're not in it for like divine reward. We're in religion for love of the game. Dude needs a God. You just need your rosary and shit, dude.
Okay. I don't believe in a God as like a physical being, but I believe in a God as like an overarching, like, I hate the word energy, an overarching like
aura,
connective tissue of the world.
I would say like that I would be similar, but I don't think that a force we would describe as God sentient. I just think that it is the machinations of causality.
Yeah, it's the internal system of checks and balances that keep the universe from imploding.
It is blind, it is uncaring, and there's nothing we can do to challenge its decisions. And we are all but slaves to whatever has been put in effect long, long before we were ever born. I just think life makes a lot more sense if you look at it as though, like, something is maintaining things.
Sure, yeah.
And there's currents and shit, but it does not care. It is not thinking. And then you look and go, oh, everything kind of falls into place how things go. We're all just slaves to these currents. Right now, in a really silly one, president's gonna fucking sue the UN. Does that mean every nation has to come to the court? We don't have a courtroom big enough for that.
I'm sure there'll just be representatives of every nation.
Does the UN have its own representative? It has to have its own person, right?
There has. I actually don't know that, but there has to be.
Also, how wouldn't we be? We're on the Security Council. Are we suing ourselves in that situation?
At least partially.
I don't know how suing works in a courtroom, how a lawsuit works in a courtroom, but I'm assuming for this exercise that there are stands you take, much like a criminal case. Does this mean Trump has to like get from the prosecutors and go to the defendants?
I don't think
but
so.
But you're on the Security Council. You have the wild ability to just shoot things down. A fatal flaw in the design of the UN.
Yeah, there has to be a way to cover that. There has to be a way to cover for that. Dude, I don't know enough about this.
It's because the winning parties of World War II were put on the Security Council.
Yeah.
I can't speak why people thought this was a good idea. I'm sure there's reasons listed. I don't know why. But it's like, I'm actually even sure Britain might be on it. But I know like Russia, China, America are like the big people on it because they do things.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they each individually have complete veto power.
That's insane.
If you wondered why you've never been like, hey, why isn't the UN done more things? It's because oftentimes when they go to do things, America, China, Russia go, no, and then it's vetoed.
It should be a Supreme Court justice type of thing where it's like 3 out of 5 have to agree.
Yeah, I mean, that would be marginally better.
That, again, it wouldn't be perfect. You should probably get intake from all of the members of the UN.
You're correct. It should be a United Nations like, where every nation votes on things. But no, it's like, has America, we should do an inquiry into American, it maybe needs to be 2, it might need to be more than, no, is it? Yeah, sorry, there are more people on the Security Council, but only 5 of them can just do that. The other ones, I think, get taken on, it is, China, France, Russia, the United Kingdom, United States, and they can veto any decision other than a procedural decision.
This is. I mentioned earlier about bidding on medical equipment being dystopian. This is dystopian.
It's nuts, isn't it? Like, they pass this in like 1946 or 47, probably. I'm not sure when the UN started existing. It's like right after World War II. And they're like, this is a good thing we've done. We'll always be friends. America, Russia, China, France, and the UK. What could go wrong?
I am not pro having five people make all of the decisions of the members of all the world of the UN.
Yeah.
But if you're only going to really functionally have five people make all of the decisions, three of the five have to agree.
If I became God Emperor tomorrow, I could just remove the Security Council and say it's me now, and the UN would run the exact same way. Is that I would do things, if I didn't like it, I'd go, no, and that's that. Nothing's changed.
If you became God Emperor, would you appoint a UN leader, or would you be in charge of all decisions from the UN?
I would like there to be like a
representative,
a
through
Congress.
You? Like a, oh, okay.
Okay, if we want to get really into how much time I spend thinking about how I'd run the world if I was a God Emperor.
Sure.
How much thought I put into this on a daily basis. I don't think that I would want to pass, like, laws on the local level. I think that there would be an overarching imperial, the divine imperial law,
mm-hmm.
which is much broader, and that is applied to every nation on earth can keep existing. We're all one big thing. No, you can still be France. I don't give a shit. But there's gonna be like a UN, but it's like a it's in a big golden building, and you send representatives there, and you actually do stuff. And, like, I have ultimate veto power, obviously, but I'm not going to exercise it. I'm lazy. But there's, like, an imperial divine law, which every law can't, like, that's the supreme law. You can't pass a law that goes against that. And there'd be, like, people to discuss whether or not, because it's going to be more like 10 commandments. Very simple. Don't let your people die. People must be fed.
So it would be like the 30 human, like, inalienable human rights if they were actually inalienable.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, there'd be some things in there like, I'm the one true religion, and there's only one church, and you must worship at the grace of me. But a lot of it would be like, hey, no genocides. Murder and rape, definitely wrong. That oversees, like, every court case. So if you pass a court case where someone definitely murdered someone, but like, oh, we decide they're innocent for whatever fucking reason, sorry, buddy, they're being punished. That's the divine law. If you murder or rape... If it is proven you murdered, like, Brock Turner would be fucking fried. I don't care what the courts say. Divine law. Get.
He would
sword.
Would you even? I mean, I assume if you're God Emperor, you are omnipotent in some way, or omnipresent in that, like, you're everywhere.
I have some great power that allowed me to become God Emperor.
So you would know before there was a trial.
I'm not sure. Whenever you see God Emperors, they're usually all powerful, but not all knowing. So there would be a big judicial apparatus. The courts of heaven, as it were. So there'd be a big apparatus and shit. There'd be people working in, like, an office, being like, oh, a court case that goes against the law. And there'd be people debating laws and stuff. It'd be a whole fucking administration. I'm gonna put Brandon in charge of it.
He would love that.
He would love it so much.
He would love
that. And
he'd
be so good at it. Can you imagine fucking, like, I don't know, someone, like, does, like, a little genocide? Because it never gets big. Because we step in. But, like, a little genocide starts happening. And, like, this doesn't fucking, this isn't a genocide, blah, 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 blah. And then, like, blah, 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 like, golden light, Brandon shows up. And he's like, fuck you. It's a genocide. Everyone's like, he speaks with the word of God. Sorry, buddy. We could pass legislation that says you're right, but... God would veto it. So now my plan's to like appoint someone the herald, my voice, so I can just fuck off and not do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to, like, talk to, like, the world or talk to people, I just send them to relay my words.
Okay.
So I can, like, paint Warhammer instead of attending a meet. I hate meetings.
Okay.
People see that this dream of mine as, like, a need for control. Really, I just want to make everything better. Using immense power that no one can refute, and then fuck off. And the churches, of course. But I get, if I bring world peace, I get one universal church of me as a treat. Right?
Sure. I mean,
right?
Sure.
Yeah.
So I picked the movie this week.
Harrison bounded to my door and said, "Konnichiwa, agoo!" And like floated up, and there was fucking like cartoon graphics in the background. And I was like, what the fuck?
I picked, I want to say it's 2021. I picked the second anime movie of this podcast. I picked both anime movies of this podcast.
Yeah, I'm never going to bring an anime. There's not an anime movie I've seen that you haven't.
Crazy.
I've only seen the Ghibli movies.
I brought Pompo the Cinephile. I brought for a couple reasons.
I want to get my two things out of the way right now so we can have a spirited, well-educated discussion without me yelling for the rest of this. I hate that she's a fucking girl.
Yes.
If
like
she
a
was,
child?
Yeah, yes. If she was an actual child, I'd be fine with it. Child prodigy. But she's a grown woman?
Yes.
Who is a little child. And I know you can draw grown women.
Yes.
The other woman's a grown woman.
I agree. No, I'm on your side here.
Okay.
I think there are some things in anime you just gotta let go. I agree with you. It's weird. It's kind of creepy. They don't go as far as most of the... I'm not gonna even say most. But many go.
It's just a weird fucking choice.
They don't...
And then they do nothing with it.
That... I would hate it more if they actively sexualized her.
Yeah.
They don't sexualize her. They do like that. Which I'm not saying I want them to sexualize her. It's the more baffling decision. But I think it's also the correct decision if you're going to
please
chibi.
Tell me more in greater detail why you don't want them to sexualize it so we don't suspect that you actually do. It's like starting to get to politics. Do you see like fucking unprompted Benjamin Netanyahu released a 2-minute video about why he didn't kill Ben Shapiro?
That's awesome.
And everyone's like...
we checked up on Ben Shapiro?
Not Ben Shapiro. Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk.
Yeah. But he's like, Israel did not do this. And it's like, everyone that said that I thought was crazy. But the other thing I hate is that they, and there's exceptions. Obviously, there are the occasional rare miracle of a producer who's like a creative person. But like us, the only producer we see is like, I'm going to make an incredibly risky financial decision based on vibes and dreams. And it's like,
There are a couple things. One, I think that entire last act is just vibes and dreams. And two, I think it's also because she wrote it. So in her head, he's in a way telling her story and she's trusting him too. So the best way that
she can tell her. She talks a lot about how important hopes and dreams are though. The banker who's like, banks aren't meant to help people with their dreams.
I agree with both of those and many more criticisms. This movie is, it's about a young man in his mid-20s, early 20s.
It's really hard to, except for like the lead actress and the producer's grandfather. And the lead actor.
Martin Braddock.
It is impossible to tell what age anyone's really supposed to be.
So I'm going to guess mid-20s. I'm also going to say Pompo is like, I'm going to say early 30s. Mid-30s.
100% she's mid-30s? Fucking weird choice.
I agree. They don't sexualize her, so I let it go.
Japan, you love to be horny in your films. Fucking just make her a banging ass early MILF. What are you doing? You had a choice there to be horny in a way that isn't weird, and then you chose to be weird in a not horny way.
They were also horny in a way that isn't weird with Mystia in the very beginning. So, okay, so Pompo is the inheritor and the president of this movie production company called Peterson Films. And she inherited it from her grandfather, and they specialize in, like, schlocky B movies, like cheap in out 90 minutes max. Like, let's
but they're wildly successful.
Let's entertain an audience. She's Roger Corman essentially. She's a Roger Corman analog.
Like it's like if every B movie she made was as popular and as good as fucking Mission Impossible Fallout, which I would describe as an A movie who's secretly a B movie. I mean, that's most Mission Impossible these days. Or like Fast and the Furious might be a better example.
Sure.
She makes Fast and the Furious, but more B movie flavored.
She very much has movies down to a science.
This movie does a lot of movie. I was surprised. At certain points, I'm like, because I know it's based on like
a manga, yeah,
a manga. And I'm like, whoever wrote this had to have worked in the film industry.
Has to.
Because there is so much things where I'm like, okay, so you're like definitely speaking from like the having a background of working in film or film education. If you didn't work in film, you took your degrees in film.
Sure.
Absolutely. Because there's so many things I'm like, is this movie for like film? It gets so specific at certain points. I'm like looking at the editing screen. I'm like, that's correct.
I don't love often. There are obviously exceptions. I find movies about making movies kind of very annoying.
This might be one of the most accurate ones I've seen, just on the nuts and bolts of it.
There are, yes. This, have you seen Dave Made a Maze?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, it's fantastic. I'll bring it to the pod at some point. But this is way more like about making a movie than Dave Made a Maze is.
Yeah, it's incredible how much detail they... Because it's not like the like boop, 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 but like there's so many little things where I'm like, yeah, no, that's right.
So Pompo, despite...
I was expecting like, whoa, whoa, just, you know, anime, everything. And there's a lot, towards the end, it gets little anime things. But everything where they're on set is like very accurate to a point that it almost feels like non-congruent with the format. I feel like I'm like any format. I'm like, this feels like I should be watching like a doc or something.
The only thing that this movie doesn't not even get right, but correctly chooses to cut out is making movies as a lot of hurry up and wait. Well, this movie is very much like, no, like a good B movie. It's like, no, action, action, yeah. Action, action. The first half of this movie is a little slow. I love it though. The moment Martin Braddock enters, that last hour sings, baby. Also, the filming of the movie, not counting the bonus day of shooting, but the filming of the movie is only 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's incredibly short.
And it feels full, but it doesn't feel too
short.
And it's like
90% of them just doing technicals, like describing how one makes a movie
and how like you turn like shitty weather into like a metaphor in your scene, so that like
that when this movie was made, the Japan didn't have the volume set yet.
So Pompo, despite making B movies, decides to write an Oscar movie.
Yep.
She writes a script called Meister about a conductor who goes to the Swiss Alps and meets a young girl.
It's like conducts
his aria.
It's like Whiplash through classical music meets the Sound of Music.
A little bit. I have not seen Bradley Cooper's Maestro, but that probably, and I'm not saying they go to the Swiss Alps in that movie. But
is that
like,
the one where you have the nose prosthetic?
Yes. Which, weird, every one of the family members was fine with it. And I'm not in a room.
Yeah, I'm not even like as long as everyone in the family's okay. It's just such a weird decision.
It really was, but everyone in the family seemed okay. I was on record.
Jewish or not?
Yeah, for real.
I get it. Like the Hungarian jaw. Like if you had someone playing a Polish man and you didn't cover them in like fake prosthetic hair, like, what the fuck are you doing?
But but Maestro is likely the at most apt analog.
Yeah.
I think, no, this movie came out in 01 and I want to say Maestro was 02. I was like, this may have been like pseudo like written at the same time, made at the same time. No, it wasn't.
Maestro is based off this movie.
yeah. But Gene Finney is Pompo's intern who she lets direct Meister as his debut first feature in a move that Roger Corman would do all. I mean, she really is like a Roger Corman analog. A lot of like very popular directors that we know come from the Roger Corman school. Normally, from what I read from his autobiography, it took longer. Like, it wasn't like intern to director, but I mean, he edits the one trailer for, but it's like it goes from like PA to editor to cinematographer to director. Like it,
yeah.
Like, but there was a steady, like Joe Dante, Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, Francis Ford Coppola, James Cameron, Jack Nicholson, just off the top of my head, those who I can name, who like all worked with Brian, who all worked like it, like on Roger Corman projects.
Who only ate donuts, much like Pompo.
Yes.
We see her donuts and drink coffee.
And does she drink the champagne?
I don't remember her drinking it. And she enters every room and announces, "Don't, I'm here now," which is a power move. I will say this: the one thing she gets is the powerful producer thing, 100% correct. Where literally every move that this child MILF makes is a power move.
Please never refer to as a child. Never. I know. I'm killing that right now. Please never call her a child MILF.
No promises. But everything she does is incredibly power move like coded. Not even like an aggressive way. Just she enters every room saying, "It's me, Pompo." So when she comes, when she's leaving, she's like, "Pompo's going away." She comes back, "Pompo's here." Her secretary delivers every message and acts it out as though she was saying it. She's a brand.
She is. And she, I mean, because they're a B movie company, they have to be short. But also, she really only likes 90 minutes max, because her grandfather, who used to own and run the company when she was young, would show her all of these movies. But she hated watching long movies with her grandfather because she was a child and couldn't sit still. And so 90 minute movies were like a treat. And so she only makes 90 minute movies. So despite the fact that she wrote this like epic, Oscar style, Nia Academy. Also, all of the naming conventions in this movie is it's Nialywood, and so it's like the Nia Academy Awards.
And they give little cats.
Yeah, and yes. And weirdly, Niopsy instead of Pepsi. It's just so this company world all takes place.
This person's like, "I gotta rebrand everything. I'm gonna do it as uniform, I'm doing as uniformly as possible."
But
I wrote a script to change proper names and just take the first four letters and make it Nia.
So Gene.
I didn't even notice the I thought he, I was like, what? I was just like, I mean, it is clearly Pepsi, but I'm like, guy who made this really fucking likes Pepsi.
So Gene is put in charge of directing this movie, right? And Pompo is able to pull some strings where she's able to get Martin Braddock, who is publicly known as quite possibly the greatest actor alive. He's like a very like notorious awardsy, like pomp and circumstance style actor.
And I think also in like just sense of scale, it's like, if you just said, "All right, I pulled some strings and Marlon Brando's here."
It's Marlon Brando, but also our friend Shelby is the female lead.
Like, yeah. He's like, it really is. Yeah, so I got fucking...
So he sees Natalie...
I got Leonardo DiCaprio and this girl named June, and they're going to lead our movie.
And he sees her on the subway jump into a puddle, and then she leaves the audition, and then Pompo writes the script for her. Also in a very Roger Corman-y, the script was done almost immediately. Roger Corman was notorious for having, well, I mean, because they were B-movies, he was notorious for having like very tight writing schedules. I mean, because they made 1,000 movies a year. Listen, not all of them are good. Some of them are genuinely masterpieces.
I
mean, yeah,
I think if it was my job, I could pump out a pretty decent B movie script pretty quickly.
But this isn't like a B movie script.
No, what's insane is that this is like an Oscar worthy. This is going to be like one of the greatest movies of all time.
But
with a script that was written in like maybe 30 minutes.
But is somehow genuinely masterful that the first 20 minutes is so dense that it's 90 minutes of story.
Yeah, what's that? Like, the script was written so quickly, and he's like, "Fuck, like, it's impossible to bring this down to time as written." It's like the size of like a fucking Harry Potter novel.
It's the size of a regular script.
It looked thicker. It's the size of a regular script. It looked like a 3-hour movie script.
Sure.
It looked thick.
But it's like page 20 was page 90 of the editing timeline. We're going to get to that. But
I mean, he read it in like an hour and 15 minutes.
there's no way on earth that this movie was 90 minutes long.
The script would have to, because he read the entire thing in about an hour and 15 minutes, which would imply around 90 pages of script.
So, yeah, it would imply. There are obviously, it's not a perfect thing, like... the original, I want to say the first Lord of the Rings script is like 118 pages, and that's a 3-hour movie. The Social Network script is like 160 pages, but it's a 2-hour type movie. Like, Evil Dead is like 40 pages.
Evil Dead is a napkin with 5 lines written on it, rolled around a blunt that has a note that says, just give this to Bruce.
But I think now that we have like we have Maestro in the real world, that we know how long this movie would be. Also, it's a fantasy world. The Academy Awards don't reward short movies. Like, that's just notorious. They reward, like, it's roughly between 215 and 245 is like their sweet spot. So when he says it's exactly 90 minutes, it's like, first off, there's no way in hell that movie is
it's 90 minutes
cogently told
and
in
it
90
is
minutes.
As it's as good as the Maestro,
but the Maestro is 211. Like, we have a real world analog.
They don't show you the 15 minutes after the movie where the world falls apart, because it's just warped space time so much that this movie is a time anomaly.
And I understand that it's a callback to her wanting short movies and everything, but there also could be something said of like, it's a slightly longer movie and she still loves it.
This is not a movie.
She could be proven wrong.
This is probably a movie that you take 2 piss breaks in.
At least, I mean,
there's a whole part.
Let's just call it Maestro at 211. Let's say they magically managed to...
It's too fucking... Because there's the move... There's, like, part of the movie, which is the whole thing about a man who's the greatest director, and then his preferred thing, his masterpiece he wants to do, fails.
Yes.
That's one half of a movie. That's then... At the end, we get the second half of that movie where he gets it to succeed. In the middle of that is a different movie
where
the
he's
same
in the Swiss
character.
Where he's in the Swiss Alps. But by the way, we don't see our female lead for another 30 minutes after the 90
this
minutes.
This movie is like Gone with the Wind length. It is like a 3-hour. It has to be like 3 fucking hours.
Yeah, I like to live in a world where like it is like a 2-hour movie and she's wrong, but also he's wrong, and that they were able to find the middle instead of like, no, Pompo's just right. She's always right.
She's right because he doesn't plan it to be 90 minutes. He makes the final cut.
He
looks
does
at the time,
epic sword film.
Which is how it works.
Yeah.
And
it's sometimes how it feels. When you're on a roll, that is sometimes how it feels.
We both used the film sword.
Yes.
We both wielded the film sword many times. So but then he looks up at the how long is it? And he goes, ooh, because it's the perfect cut. Him not looking at the time is 90 minutes because Pompo's always right. That's her character.
Not counting opening credits or like the opening logos and not counting end credits, the movie is exactly 90 minutes and 6 seconds long.
That was like the top comment on YouTube.
But it's 6 seconds too long, which I am mostly chalking up to rendering in different languages and everything.
Pompo didn't produce it.
Sure.
Because Pompo's always, her character trait is always correct on matters of film.
But I love when movies do shit like that. But like, it's insane. But so Marlon Brando, Martin Braddock, has I think the healthiest relationship a lead actor and a first-time director can have ever, in that he's in no way trying to control the film. The scene when Gene challenges him on something like that won't work, and then he freaks out, like, oh, I'm so sorry, like, I didn't mean to just negate your opinion, and he's just like, no, I'm gonna give you my opinion, but it's your vision, That would never happen on a film set. And but also, it's the healthiest relationship I've ever seen between like a veteran actor coming out of retirement after 10 years.
I could see Brad Pitt doing that.
Sure, but Brad Pitt is still actively working on
He's like this massive lead,
but he's also like reminiscent of like an old Hollywood
who is like, I'm the best actor who ever lived, but is also like, yeah, you know, I respect the process. And I'm like, maybe Brad Pitt seems chill enough that he would have that attitude.
So the filming runs as smoothly as it possibly can, even when there's the day of rain and they're like, do you want to shoot all of your interiors? And he's like, no, I have this.
From the two anime movies I've seen that aren't Ghibli films.
Uh-huh.
Where the conflict, well, it exists. Very, very low stakes in feeling. Like it doesn't feel like the supercharged emotional conflict. It's just like there's a problem and they overcome it. Because like even in oh no, Pepe the Frog virus is going to steal
Summer Wars, yeah.
Is going to steal Joe Biden's Roblox account, the movie, where the world could end. It just doesn't feel as like intense as like Western conflict does.
Sure. But I also think that is, I mean, Summer Wars is about him meeting his wife's family for the first time.
Yeah.
So like,
I think that's what it is, that all the actual conflicts of these movies are much more personal and lower stakes than the actual conflicts of the movies.
One of the reasons I picked this movie is that it very much has like, it's deeply like, a lot of the anime movies that make it to the States are either like hyper dramatic, emotional, Your Name, Weathering With You style movies, or they're like hyper action, like promare type movies. And while this is definitely anime in feeling, it doesn't really overplay the emotion. It's just fun. Like, you can watch this, you can analyze this movie for deep themes. And like, it does. It says a lot about like the life of an artist and the lengths you're willing to go to. Like when he has essentially a stroke or exhaustion,
yeah, he collapses.
He like collapses.
Yeah, the movie has the great moral.
But also,
sacrifice everything for your art.
Which, do I love that the ending devolves into hustle porn? But for filmmaking,
it's
no.
It's so Japanese. Sacrifice your family, friends, entire life, taking care of yourself, whatever's needed to succeed.
But also, the main idea, the message that this movie is trying to push, and if you want to turn your brain off, are just, movies are fucking magic.
Ignore
and
your doctors.
They are. Movies are magic.
Pull your IV out of your arm and get to editing, boy, if you want to be anything in this world.
It is, it's very All That Jazz-esque at the end, except he doesn't die. He's rewarded.
Yeah, the Japanese movie, they have like the highest suicide rate in the world.
Another thing I like that this movie does in like an actor director relationship is his relationship with Natalie, who plays Lily, the second lead, is like, you almost think they're gonna go like romantic, and it's not. It's deep care for the project that bleeds into pseudo care for each other, and it's almost, they're not quite friends, but they rely on each other emotionally like too deeply. But also, I would truly believe that after this project is done, they don't speak to each other
again. She also spent a bunch of time just hanging out with the lead actress. He says men don't like muscles.
Mistia, yeah. Mistia is the lead in most of the B movies.
I have to put on weight for movies because men don't like muscles.
And she ends up in the reshoots coming back to play the wife who Mar-O-Matic,
and like a
Martin
Mrs.
Braddock
Doubtfire
leaves.
But same gender situation.
Yeah, in like a heavy makeup, dyed hair. It doesn't look like her. It kind of in a Bradley Cooper, Leonard Bernstein situation. But there are things where that's been done before. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
The idea of her, I guess she's a B movie actress. So the idea of her not having a smartphone is wild.
I think it's like, well, I think it's like a healthy, like, well, first off, I think that's healthy.
It's healthy.
Like, I think it's her realizing that either this will take over my life or this did take over my life. And I now am learning to have a healthier relationship with my fan base and with the world around me.
See, I wasn't even thinking about like social media. I was just thinking about like email.
I mean, she has assistants.
I guess.
Maybe that's why Mistia... Also, Mistia doesn't... wants to be completely made up because she wants to star in one of Jean's films in the future, but she wants to be the lead.
Yeah.
And until that happens, she doesn't want people to know it's her, which is kind of a weird... Maybe that's a Japanese thing. I don't... But, like... She also goes by a pseudonym in the movie. Like, I understand... See, I thought the direction was going to be, like... I wanted there to be the twist, and I didn't want it to be spoiled for people. But no, it's almost entirely selfishly motivated. Yeah.
And it's seen as a positive thing, so it's not displayed as negative, so it has to be a cultural difference.
After what is quite possibly the calmest shoot in the world, they had one rainy day that they were able to turn into the most. Well, they were eaten by wolves.
Some of them ran away, and then were eaten by wolves.
But then they had the smoke machine and had goat stand-ins and real goats,
which I really identified with. Because I think if I was out in like the wilderness as he was, I'd call that the comparable to like the untamed frontier of early America. That's some Daniel Boone shit he was in. If I saw a bunch of goats, I would be similarly afraid. I think anything more than, I think five goats is where I top out. We're like, four goats? Okay, there's two pairs of friends. Or maybe they're like two husbands and wives. Or two husbands and husbands. Or two wives and wives. But if I see five goats, I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Why are there five goats here?
So, the main conflict of the last 30 minutes is that he has to edit the movie. And
fam, so real, so true.
So real. But he edits his first
it's
cut.
Me by a film. As filmmakers, the only time I ever was like even remotely stressed making things in film school, when I was like, oh fuck, I have to edit it. Oh my god, it's due in 2 days. But also the very real of like, are you gonna be able to get it done in time? I have 6 days.
Yeah.
This movie is so aggressively made by someone who's made movies before.
But the first 20 pages is 90 minutes of movie. And then he's in the Swiss Alps for 30 minutes before we meet our female lead. So we are 2 hours into this. I don't even know how long, because anyway, we're 2 hours into this 12-hour epic. This miniseries.
To be fair, you go through like hundreds of pages before you meet Jesus in the Bible. Is he not the main character of the Bible?
Definitely of the New Testament. I mean, God is arguably the main character of the whole. It's a Star Wars it's a Luke Skywalker Darth Vader situation.
Well, I mean, Jesus is God.
But anyway, he's got to edit this movie, and he talks to, at a couple points in time, he talks to Mr. Peterson, Ompompo's grandfather who used to run.
Who never remembers his name.
Who only the third time remembers him. And he like asks for advice, and the big advice that he gives him.
He always thinks he's like a different actor, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's always like, you're this actor.
Yes. He's like, who is the film for? Find yourself in the film. And then Gene does. And we get this it happens the first time when he's editing the trailer. When Gene gets into editing, he picks up, like, zone.
You're making it sound really dramatic when anyone who's made a film has used the films. Like, look, I don't fucking be like, oh, super dramatic to use a frying pan when I'm cooking. When you're making a movie, you use the film source.
Does it not feel epic and magic to you, though?
It's a hammer. It's a tool. I mean, sure, it's kind of cool the first time when you enter the film verse.
Yeah, when the strips of like real film, even though you film digitally,
that is
are,
super.
Like,
it is super
you.
Cool the first time, and I guess looking back,
and you
it's
have
neat.
To splice it with the film sword.
I mean, that's how I
and then
the
magically fuse them together with the like
the first time
jitsu
I used
powers.
The first time I used a frying pan was pretty fucking cool too.
Just because. because you have let your whimsy die with repeated use doesn't mean that I
have to. I just think you're overly whimsical in this situation.
I also am whimsical when something works in a frying pan. I find that to be just as beautiful. I think I'm the act of human creation and the act of
I'm not even saying it's not cool or dramatic. I'm just saying it's not cool or super neat when any editor opens up Adobe Premiere, which gives you the film sword, and you enter the film verse. All right, I'm just saying it's not dramatic because literally hundreds of people do it a day. It's no different than getting on the bus.
But I do think it is dramatic, even though it happens all the time. I do think the moment you've cracked the movie is dramatic every time.
That's cool.
Even if we don't want to talk
Before I get too far away from it, do you think the grandfather's senile? This is a theory I had watching the movie.
I think he's getting there.
Because he's three types of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
You're that famous actor. The butts were nice. And then like a moment of clarity. And he's like, I'm making a movie out of old film. And then he's like, hang on, moment of clarity. Great film advice.
I think he's getting there. I don't know if he's fully arrived yet, but he's definitely getting there. And
I'm making a movie.
And then Gene realizes that he's making this movie for 13-year-old Gene, because 13-year-old Gene was so sad and alone, but he felt solace in film, and he wants to make a film that the 13-year-old Gene of today can find solace in, that makes him want to make the movie that the 13-year-old Gene of today's...
I do find it hard to...
20 years from
that
now.
He had no friends. And like, I'm not gonna nitpick this. I just want to expand on it, because like, it's a film choice. I don't think it's that big of a thing.
Yeah,
but like, a really weird kid who's super into film has at least one other friend, unless he's like from the smallest fucking town.
Yeah, he pseudo had the guy who became the banker, because the one time he was not... I'm sure that in Gene's head, Alan the banker was his best friend.
It's just like I knew a guy in like late high school who was super into Bakugan, and that guy had a crew.
You've mentioned before that you don't think I love subplots. This is a movie where the subplot, I think, perfectly fits the movie. It fits tonally. It wraps into the story. I love the Alan Bank subplot in this movie.
It threw me off a bit at first. Once it got going, it was good.
Sure.
I think there's too much time between the scene on the airplane and when they meet up again.
In the town?
Yeah.
Which is funny. In reality, I think it's like less than 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's like 10 minutes for me. But the airplane thing, I'm like, this is a bit odd. Is there going to be a subplot here? Once it got going, I'm like,
Yeah. That's fair. The banker, he went to high school with Gene, and then he became very successful in college and was like... he's like a high level, not executive, but like step below executive.
Well, he was an analyst, and now he's moved up to a not executive position.
Yeah. Like, in pseudo investor, but not investor, account manager. Let's say that.
Yeah. He became an account manager. I mean, we get into it later with the banking, where he's like, banks are for dreams, says the banker. And it's like, but he's like, I didn't know these people didn't like golf. Every rich person likes golf, whether or not they actually like it.
But
the only reason golf exists is because...
But I also believe that bank people, at their core, need to believe that banks are for people's dreams. I think in their head, in order for them to sleep at night...
I think, like, his position do. I think the high executives are like, I'm here to make money, and that's okay, and I can sleep on that. Like, the person's like, hey, I'm going to repossess all these people's homes because the bubble burst. I'll make so much money. That's their mistake. I'm a banker. Because I think you can only get to that position. It's like with billionaires. You can only get to that position
when your brain breaks.
When you are missing the Holy Spirit in your heart.
Yes. But even though they raised enough money on fake Kickstarter, which the bank decided. So in the pitch meeting, Alan is like, this bank to Pompo, this bank doesn't want to do this. They movies are a bad investment, but I'm a master pitchman. I am an analyst. God damn it. I'm going to show them.
And she says, good idea. Which is how you know it's going to work out, because Pompo's always right.
And so he live streams this pitch meeting, doesn't tell any of the executives. I'm not quite sure the legality of that situation.
You know, I'm going to be honest, having ideas of consent forms, I don't think it's legal.
which is why they're so upset to they're being recorded. But he records this pitch meeting, and at first all of the executives are like, this, we don't sell dreams, we don't fund dreams, we like we're hard number data people. And then he's like, you want your numbers, bitch? And I've been live streaming the entire time, and here's millions of people miraculously watching this live
stream. And they're all like, yeah, dreams! Yeah, Cinderella, dreams!
Film of dreams!
If you film it, we will come!
And they raise like over half a mil on Kickstarter, which is enough to fund an entire movie, let alone one scene. He just needs one scene. And then the president of the bank shows up and is like, I've watched your little live stream, kid. We're going to fund 10 times
whatever the final Kickstarter is. You're doing way too much intensity. This man meanders in like, yeah, watch your live stream. And you know what? I think this is a, like, Sam Elliott could play this guy. He's like, you know what? I think this is a good idea. And our motto's, we make dreams happen. No, it's not. I've decided it is. Oop-a-doo.
And as much as unrealistic as that scene is, it got me. It got me to my core, because movies are fucking magic, Matthew.
I felt increasing anger at the concept of banks as that scene went on.
I agree. Until the president decided to show up and is like, and of course
howdy he there, some folks. Movie,
but like, and then they clap for him, but they managed to film their one scene for $6 million, because I don't know how. There are entire movies. There are movies we've watched for this podcast that were filmed for $6 million, but they need $6 million for one scene. And so they film this scene about what he's willing to give up, and turns out it's his daughter, his wife. His best friend,
everything,
his health, his overall career, except for this one aria. He gives up his conducting career to conduct this one aria,
and that's good.
And then they're all in the auditorium like, you did it, you bastard, you did it, you evil man.
They're all having,
you're a genius,
the Ratatouille moment where he eats the Ratatouille. Like, they're all having that exact moment,
and then
and this is good.
And it got me. Listen, I disagree with the thesis of this movie. And
Ratatouille, the story is that you have to keep your life important. Like, life's important. You can't just focus on food. Like, life's important. What the rat teaches us.
But is food music? Is food art? Some food is art.
French food.
Is food movies? No.
Is food movies?
No, food is not movies.
Hang on, let me think. Is food movies? That's like, this is a very, very good question. I'd like to do a TED
and
talk.
Because
is food movies?
And because D'Albert, Martin Braddock's character, D'Albert, he's willing, D'Albert, I think, is D'Albert.
His food movies.
Because he's willing to give up his entire life. Gene was willing to give up his entire life. He collapsed from exhaustion, yanked the IV out in the hospital, and started going back to editing his movie. And then,
In the gown.
While his codependent lead actress is like, why are you cutting all of my stuff? And then he almost doesn't cut everything. And then she grabs his hand in a moment you think is going to be romantic, but it's not. It's codependent and unhealthy.
That's a good learning moment for directors to never have your actors in the editing room.
No, absolutely not. And then he's rewarded by winning 4 NEA Academy Awards. So this movie kind of proves that you need to just destroy yourself for your art. I think all that jazz is a masterpiece. I also think all that jazz both agrees and disagrees with this movie. And it's honestly the closest analog that we have seen, like, that we can compare this movie to. And I think it's a very interesting to watch, like, the Western idea of it and then the Eastern version of not even the same movie, but the same, like, type of tone of movie. But at the end of the day, This movie rules. This movie is great. This movie has Pompo the Cinephile has mixed reviews on Letterboxd. And listen, you can analyze this movie with your brain. There are things that
but you have to analyze this movie with your heart. I'm gonna lose my goddamn.
That
shit.
Wasn't what I was gonna say. This movie, you can analyze this with your brain, absolutely. But this movie is vibes, baby. The vibes of this movie, mwah, chef's kiss, immaculate. I'm so happy I picked this. I'm probably gonna turn this into an annual thing of my annual anime movie.
Okay, I thought originally at first you were gonna say we're watching Pompo each year.
No, there's only gonna be one movie we watch
yearly
each year.
Pompo.
No, that's only gonna be Trick or Treat, which we need to schedule that. But this movie's great. Listen, it's flawed and. I love it. It's flawed, but I love it. And I'm so happy I picked it. I watched this movie with my brother and my dad.
Wow, really flexing on fatherless single child me.
Sure. With my brother and my dad in the basement of my parents' house, like the day after, either Christmas night or the night after Christmas. And my brother and I were on cloud nine. And I was afraid when I picked this movie as a last minute thing that it was not going to live up to the hype, and the first 30 minutes it were a little slow, I was like
I
want to stress,
like this movie, but like Harrison is so hyped, he's slowly advancing towards me.
Also, I want
to
state it.
He's like pacing back and forth each time he gets a bit closer to me. I feel like I'm under attack by a man yelling how good this movie is.
I only gave this movie a 4 on Letterboxd, and I might have to raise it.
it's higher than Dune.
Yeah, I like this movie way more than Dune. I gave this movie the same rating as Dune 2, which I said was great. You and Ethan and Philip sometimes like to pretend that I'm this big Dune hater. I literally said the first movie is good and the second movie is great. Okay?
Hates the fucking worm.
But I like this movie way more. Anyway, Pompo rules. Do you have any final thoughts?
God, that was aggressive. I would like to see the alternate cut of this movie where they replace Pomp with an appropriate MILF.
Yes.
But yeah, I guess final thoughts. If you're a creative, kick everyone else out of your life so that your art's good.
Don't do that. But if you are a creative, watch this movie.
Traumatize your girlfriend, cause your mother to die of heartbreak.
No.
And that webcomic you're working on, it's gonna be so fuck. It's gonna put Penny Arcade to fucking shame.
It's gonna make Homestuck look like
chopped
liver.
Homestuck look like it was drawn with crayons.
Speaking of drawn with crayons, this movie is fucking beautiful.
If you're gonna start a webcomic, get married. Have a messy divorce, then start.
There was one scene in particular when he's like begging for the funding. I think that's when it was. When it literally looks like it was drawn with crayons. This movie is beautiful. If you want to turn your brain off and watch some pretty pictures, this movie also has plenty of those. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah. If you want to write in, I'm going to say it has to be at least a 5-page paper on either supporting or going against the thesis that food is movie. TwoMenMoviePodcast@gmail.com. I will give you a letter grade. If you want to find me on Instagram, if you're like an appropriately sized MILF, I'm not sure why I'm doing my socials before the show's socials.
You do it most of the time now.
Do I?
Yes.
God, I love myself. Midwestern_magician. If you want to go to the show's Instagram, where you can see... Did I put you holding the watermelon up there?
Yes, you did.
If you want to see Harrison holding his watermelon son that he birthed, you can find that at Two-Man Movie Podcast on Instagram. And we have a YouTube where we'll eventually be putting up our 5-part docuseries as Harrison travels the globe to figure out if food is movie. It's called... we're still working on the title, but you can find that on our YouTube, Two Men and a Movie.
X-reader do you want? Do you want Mystia X-reader from this movie?
I guess.
Okay.
I guess. It's complicated by like there being like 3 female leads and 2 are drawn as children.
Don't give me an X-reader for this film.
Only one of them is drawn as children. Natalie as Lily is like young 20s and looks young 20s. Again, young. I'm saying that model could be like 21, 22. 20 maybe. I never got the creepy kid vibe from her.
I'm not feeling it. I didn't get the creepy vibe, but like she's John Younger. Send me fucking ex-goat reader.
Perfect.
Send me an ex-reader where I get just fucking ravished in a five-goat gangbang, and I will send you...
Swiss Alps?
Specifically in the Swiss Alps. I'll send you $5 if it's creamy enough.
You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Lemonade at harrisonpool.com. That's HARRISONPOOLEDOTCOM, harrisonpool.com. Or you can follow me at Letterboxd at HDPOOLE124, where I have apparently bold opinions on this movie.
I'll give you $10 if you call it goat cheese.
Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in next week when we watch either Matthew's Choice or Tron or Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I don't know when those movies
Tron
are coming
out.
Tron
or Mortal Kombat, or I'm going to bring Birth of a Nation, probably.
I mean, it would be the first October episode, so that is an appropriate horror movie.
Yeah, nothing spookier than
racism in the American South and the rise of the Klan.
I was gonna say that that's all in the past.
All right. So long and good night.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.